We're holding good Aleph, Amud Aleph, about a quarter of the way down the Amud by two dots. In the Mishnah, we went through different categories of halachas. We said there's Hetin and Dardim, where there's almost no source in Teresh of Chassab for the whole concept of being able to be Matan Neder. Okay, so we said that the number of Tanoim brought that there are, but the Gemara says all of them can be schlugged up because all of those the pasuk is needed for something else or whatever. Even Shmuel gave a remez and a pasuk for it, but it's really just that, a remez. There's nothing explicit in the pasuk on the subject. Then we said there are a few categories in halacha where there is a where it's karorim afluim b'sayra. They're like mountain hanging on a hair. There's a mikra muat b'halachas midrubis. There's very little psukim about it, and very many halachas. So Tosfos said actually those might be two different categories. One which are hilchos Shabbos, which are chagiga, which are kaharorah afluim b'sayra, and then another category. And then another category, which the Gemara is going to explain now, where you have relatively little psukim. You have psukim; it's more than just a remez, unlike with Shabbos and Chagigas, and more than just a tiny amount of psukim. You have most of the fundamentals of it are explained in the pasuk, but nevertheless, there's still a lot of details and a lot of outgrowths for which you need Torah Shabbat Peh. And then you have And then the Mishnah had gone on to say that you have other ones where you have a lot of psukim, and yesh lahem amashi yismoichu, they have what to rely on. So let's go through those. We said mikra muat v'halachas merubis. We said there are ones where you have very little mikra and a lot of halachas. So tana, we learn in a brayse, nigoyim v'ahalos, the nigoyim and ahalos always go together, because they're both complicated areas of halacha. Nigoyim is the dinim of tzaras. And ahalos is all the dinim about when you're in the same oihel as a mess, or you're overshadowing it, or it's overshadowing you, etc. That a person that you become tamei from it. So those things, the Braisa says mikra mort v'halachas merubis. Those things are relatively little psukim and a lot of halachas. What do you mean negoyim? What do you mean negoyim mikra mort? What do you mean when it comes to negoyim, it's relatively few psukim? Negoyim mikra merubahu. When it comes to negoyim, you have a lot of psukim. You have most of Parshas Tazria and most of, and a substantial part of Parshas Metzora that talk about the dinim of Negoyim. Amar Papa Hochi Karma. So the Papa says, you're right. The Braisa doesn't mean to equate the both of them. The Braisa is actually contrasting the two of them. And the reason why it's contrasting those two, Davka, is because Negoyim and Ahalos always tend to go together. Wherever most of the time, the Gemara always brings those together as two examples of areas of Halacha that are particularly difficult and complex. So hachi kama, negoyim is mikra meruba v'halachas muatis. When it comes to negoyim, you have a lot of psukim. There's relatively little halachas about it in Torah Shabbat Peh. For the most part, everything is spelled out in the psukim. So there are exceptions within negoyim themselves. We know there's different kinds. There's negoyim of skin. There's negoyim of clothes. There's negoyim of houses. The Rambam points out, in particular, when it comes to houses, he says that most of the dinim of tzaras of houses we know from Torah Shabbat Peh, because the Torah tells us several psukim about it, but there's a lot of essential details that we require Torah Shabbat Peh. But even then, I mean, we had in all Gemara before, we were saying that, for example, thing we talked about yesterday, that things that are learned from Gzeirah Shavas, for example, those are considered a strong proof. Those are not just Kharor and Atluin B'Saira, those you have something solid. So here also even the details of Torah Shabbat Peh when it comes to Negoyim are learned from Jerosh, from regular kinds of Jeroshes of the Psukim. So anyway, but Negoyim therefore is many Psukim and relatively little halachas that are Baal Peh. Ahalos is the other way around. When it comes to Dinim of Ahalos, Mikra Mort by Halachas Merubas, it's the other way around. You have relatively little Psukim and a lot of halachas. And the Gemara says, "Well, my nafkamina." So why? What's the importance of knowing that? What's the practical importance of knowing that? And the answer is, "Imistap galach milsim and negoyim." You should know if you have a question in something in the halachas of negoyim, ayin bekroy, your best bet, look in the psukim, and you're likely to find the answer there because most of it is spelled out in the psukim. On the other hand, when you have a question and something of olos, so you have a pasuk that describe a couple of psukim that describe it in Parshas Chukas and Parshas Para, but nevertheless, you have very little of all the details over there. So therefore, so if you have a question of something in olos, ayin masnisin, then you're better off looking in the Mishnayos on the subject because you're very unlikely to find the answer right there in the pasuk. So that's the difference between those. That's the difference. That's the contrast between those two, where you're better off, where you're more likely to find the answer that you're looking for. So now we're going to go through the third group that was in the Mishnah, namely the ones that are the ones that yesh lahem amashi yismoichu. Now the expression yesh lahem amashi yismoichu suggests that not all of them is in Torah Shebichsav. There's still important parts of them that are in Torah Shebal Peh. But we're saying that unlike the other ones, we have very few psukim. When it comes to Shabbos, for example, we have many psukim that tell us to keep Shabbos, but very few where it defines what exactly keeping Shabbos is. Ultimately, we learn it from the Malachas HaMishkan. So with the following groups that we're going to talk about, Hadinin and so forth, Hadinin Avodas, etc., then there you have a substantial number of psukim that talk about them, but we're still saying Yesh Lahem Amashi Yismoichu suggests they're not exclusively in Torah Shebichsav. There's still very important details of them that we find in Torah Shebal Peh. So with each one, we're going to go through and find such an example. So the question is, by Dinin, Michtav Ksivan. It says pretty much all there is to say about Dinim Ominous in the Psukim. You have most of Parashas Mishpatim is on the subject, and different places and different other places in the Torah, and Kiseitse and other things. So most anything you want to know, so pretty much anything in Dinim Ominous is in the Psukim, yet the Mishnah is phrasing it, Yesh Lahem Amashi Yismoichu, they have what to rely on, as if to imply there's very important parts of them that are not in the psukim, but you should know that they have strong sources in the psukim to rely on. So what is that? And the answer is lo nitzrach al chidur Rebbe. Yes, but what the Mishnah is talking about, for example, is what Rebbe says. An essential point about dinim mamonis that we don't know explicitly from the psukim, and we need Torah Shebal Peh to explain to us. The Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Nefesh tachas nefesh mamon. When the pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim, nefesh tachas nefesh, so the context over there is you're talking about two people are fighting, and one of them hits a pregnant woman, hit a pregnant woman and calls her to miscarry. So the pasuk describes they have to pay the husband dmei velodis, they have to pay the husband the difference in her value between when she was pregnant and when she was not. In other words, you can't really quantify, the children weren't born yet, but you can't really talk about them independently, but they were part of her, and therefore the question is, how much was she worth? Let's say if she were to be sold as a slave woman, how much would she have been worth while pregnant, where the master knows, where the buyer knows that now he's going to be getting children as well, versus not. And then the guy pays the difference. Now, so then the pasuk continues, v'im osin yeh, if there's a loss of life, if not only she miscarries, but she herself is killed. So the pasuk says, v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh. So you should give a soul instead of a soul. So what does that mean? Does it mean that because he killed her, then even though he didn't mean to, then he's chayev misa? So there's actually a machlokas about that. But Rebbe holds that not. Rebbe holds that the fact is he didn't intend to kill her. He intended to kill the other guy that he was fighting with. It's called Niskaven Larigas Zeva Horigaseh. He intended to kill somebody else. Instead, he killed the other person. So Rebbe says he's not Chayiv Misa. So Rebbe says Nefesh Tachas Nefesh means Mamon, means that he has to pay not only for the value of the children, but the value of her own life, which again, how we quantify that exactly is another matter, but we have to figure out an amount, and he has to pay it. And Rebbe continues, Ata Oimim Momon, now you're saying it means Momon, Ein Ela Nefesh Mamash, maybe not, maybe in fact, the other Chachamim who disagree with Rebbe say that it does mean Nefesh, that it does mean the fact is he killed her, and we have to assume, of course, that there was Eidim Vahasra over here, that somebody warned him, you keep on like that, you're going to end up killing somebody, and you're going to be Chayiv Misa, and he went ahead and did it anyway, but by mistake, he hit her instead of the other person that he was trying to hit. Anyway, so how do you know, says Rebbe, that it means mumma? And maybe in fact it means nefesh. Well, no, nemer in a sin of the matav and nemer in a sin of the maila. Because here we have an asata nefesh tachas nefesh. The next pasuk continues with more nesina. The next pasuk does continue with ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, etc. But it doesn't use the word nesina over there. But rather, you have a different place where it talks about nesina in actually a couple of psukim earlier, where it says nesina, where it says that if she only miscarried, the nosan b'flilim, it says you should give the money based on what the dayanim assessed. So there it says v'nasan, and here also v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh. So therefore, Rebbe says, "I have a gzeira shava malahalan mamon afkan mamon." Just like over there with the vlodders, it's clear that he's not getting executed. The pasuk clearly says that he's paying money. The same way over here with the v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh, says Rebbe, it also means that he's paying money. He's paying the dumim for the nefesh rather than anything else. Now Tosfos points out Rabbi Yochanan, who disagrees with that. Oh, not the other Chachamim would disagree with that as something else. Rabbi Yochanan actually learns something else from this. Well, he says actually that he agrees with the other Chachamim that the person would be Chayiv Misa, and then he holds in addition when a person is Chayiv Misa, then he's potter from payment. So therefore, according to him, he's not paying anything at all. So he would say that the same way as v'nasata, so the same way as ayin tachas ayin, of course, as we know, means mamon. The same way he would say that the v'nasan l'flilim means money, but the v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh would in fact be to execute him. But that point also, ayin tachas ayin, the fact that it means money is not really explicit in the pasuk either. So there you have an essential point. There you have an essential point in Dinim Mamonis, which is not in the Pesukim, which we need Torah Shabbat Peh for. So that's what the Mishnah means about Dinim Mamonis. Yesh lahem amashi yismoichu. They have what to rely on, implying, but not all of them is in Torah Shabbat Chsav. Well, here's an example of something that you don't have in Torah Shabbat Chsav. Okay, next. Avoidus, the next thing we said in the Mishnah that Yesh Lama Mashi Yismoichu was Avoidus, the dinim of the Avoidah in the Bais Mikdash. So again, the question is Michtav Ksivan. It says right there in the Pasuk all the dinim of it, how you bring each kind of korban, what you have to bring a korban for, and so forth. But in particular, we're talking about the procedures of the korban. It spells out in the Pesukim pretty clearly. The answer is L'nitzucha Ela L'hoi Lochas Adam. The answer is yes, but there is something essential missing in the psukim. Namely, it doesn't talk about the concept of halacha that there's an avoda of walking the basin of blood over to the mizbeach before you sprinkle it or pour it or do whatever you're supposed to do with it. And that we need Torah Shabbat Peh. The Tanya, as we learn in a brisa, vehi krivu. So the pasuk says that they shech the korban, and then it says vehi krivu. They offer the blood zu kabbalas adam. So the word vehi krivu means actually the Kabbalah, means receiving the blood in a mizrah. Now Rashi points out that on the face of it, the hikrivu sounds more like halacha. But the fact is, it's right after shchita. In order, there has to be something between shchita and halacha, because how are you getting the blood to the mizbeach unless you received it in a mizrah? Therefore, necessarily, if it's saying a step after, if it's saying shchita, and then one more, and then the next step after that, necessarily that step has to be Kabbalah. The apke rachmana b'loshen halacha, but the Torah expresses Kabbalah using a word of halacha, using a word that sounds like it means walking them over to the mizbeach. Dichtiv behikriv akoyin as akoy behikter amizbeicha. Namely, the pasuk says a few pesukim later, the kohen should offer everything and burn it on the mizbeach. And what do we burn on the mizbeach? Not the blood, obviously. The word vehikriv over there does mean halacha. It means bringing the limbs of the korban to the mizbeach and throwing them into the fire. So lememer dahalacha leitapka mikvah kabbalah. So therefore, in other words, what the Torah is telling you is it's using the phrase vehikrivu to refer to kabbalah sadam, but not saying vekiblu, but rather vehikrivu lememra, in order to inform you the halacha like tapka the klal kabbalah. Don't think that halacha is any less of an avoda than kabbalah. Namely, for example, now we know that the Gemara in Zvachim talks about there's many rules that you have to have with any avoda. It has to be done, anything that's an avoda has to be done by a kohen. He has to be wearing clay shoris. If he has a machshava, that if he has a machshava that could make the korban pigul, then it applies during any of the avodas. So don't think. Now Rashi points out, after all, I mean, shchita and kabbalah and zrika, you would think are all necessities. There's no way that you can bring the korban without doing those. Halacha, you would think, is maybe not considered such an important avoda, because after all, you could shecht right next to the Mizbeach, and you don't even need to walk it over. And in fact, you have an opinion of Reb Shimon, who says you don't even always need halacha. Reb Shimon agrees that when you're doing halacha, then all these rules apply to it. He just says it's possible to shecht next to the Mizbeach and not need to do halacha at all. In any case, so therefore, that is why the Torah used the word v'hikrivu to refer to Kabbalah, but make it sound like it's referring to halacha, l'memre, in order to tell you, d'halacha l'tapka miklal Kabbalah, don't exclude halacha from the same category as Kabbalah. The same dinim apply to both of them, that whatever needs to be done by Kabbalah, namely that it has to be a kohen and wearing a big kahuna and with his right hand and not having machshavas that would pass a little, etc., all the same things apply to halacha. Now Tosfos points out then, another reason why we didn't want to say v'hikrivu refers to halacha is precisely that, because after all, it is possible to shecht on top of the mizbeach, and therefore then you don't need to walk anything anywhere. So therefore, the Gemara preferred to understand that v'hikrivu refers to a step that has to be done no matter what, namely the Kabbalah. But in any case, the fact that halacha is considered an avoda, the fact that during halacha it would be possible to passel the korban with a machshava, or it would be possible to passel it by having a zor do it, or et cetera, all that detail, we don't know from Torah Shemachsav. We have to figure it out by understanding, but with Torah Shemachsav, that the word vehikrivu refers to halacha. It refers to Kabbalah, and then to say, but on the other hand, it sounds like it means halacha, and therefore that it means both. So that's what we mean, that avodas yesh lahem amashi yismoichu. There's definitely a solid basis in Torah Shabbat for this concept, namely the pasuk. But on the other hand, we need Torah Shabbat Peh in order to understand it. Next, the Mishnah had said taros. The next thing in the Mishnah was that the dinim of taros and tumus, the subject of seder taros. So we said those are also yesh lahem amashi yismoichu. And again, the question is, michtav ksivan. It says right there in the psukim, everything that can make you tamei, and how a person becomes tahor and so forth. What is there that we're saying yesh lahem amashi yismoichu, implying there's not a source in Torah, there's not really something clear in Torah Shabbat about it, and we need Torah Shabbat Peh. What essential point is there in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara that has that? And the answer is lo nitzrucha elo l'shiur mikvah d'lo k'sivah. The answer is there is. The chiddush would be as far as the shiur mikvah, where it doesn't say in the pasuk how much. The pasuk says in many places that a tamei person has to bathe in water, but it never says how much water. The Tanya, and we learn in a brisa, v'rochatz sore b'mayim, or it's in parenthesis because there's various psukim, v'rochatz es kol b'sore, whatever, there's different psukim that express this idea that the person has to bathe and has to go and dip himself in water. So when it says, it can be in parenthesis because the Gemara is first darshaning the words berochatz b'mayim, and then it's gonna darshan the words as kol b'sarei that are in the middle. Or again, in some psukim it actually says berochatz b'mayim as kol b'sarei. In other words, it's berochatz b'sarei b'mayim. There's different psukim. Anyway. So, bamayim means b'mei mikvah. When it says bamayim, now bamayim with a patach means in the water. Rashi in various places in Chumash explains that when you have an oisa shimush at the beginning of the word, for example, a beis or a lamed, and it has a patach underneath it, that's the equivalent of having a hay at the beginning of the word. So therefore, it means not just in water, it means in the water. So what's the water, meaning Rashi says, as opposed to maim shu'uvim, as opposed to drawn water. It has to be natural rainwater or spring water. So it can be rainwater, Rashi points out. Only a zav has to tovel in spring water, in maim chayim. But nevertheless, it has to be special in that it's not shu'uvim. Tosfos disagrees and points out that there's actually a different pasuk from where we learn the concept of that maim shu'uvim is possible for a mitzvah. So rather, Tosfos says the Bamayim teaches us that the water has to be collected in one place. If you're dipping in Mei Mayim, it's not necessary. Then you can be dipping in Zeichelin, even though the water is flowing. But if you're dipping in a mikveh of rainwater, then the water has to be in one place. Okay, it can't be flowing. So that Tosfos says is what we learned from the Bamayim. Anyway, when it says es kol, so far that tells us you need a mikveh, and it tells us fine according to Rashi that you don't need shu'urim, and according to Tosfos that needs to be still water, but we still don't know how much. So when it says es kol basara, when it says all his flesh, that means mayim shekol gufoy oila bahem. It means that they have to have enough water that the entire body would fit into the kamahein. How much would that be? Amma, al amma brum sholish amas. That would be one amma by one amma by three ammas. A person's body is one amma in width. Tosfos points out over here and in other places that when a person is wearing clothes, they take up an amma. When they're not with clothes, and of course when you go into the mikveh, it's without, then you're slightly less than an amma. Therefore, an amma is enough to fit the person. And three amos, now Tosfos over here and in other places discusses, what does it mean? Usually we say that a person is four amos tall. Now there is, in fact, there are various places in Shas, Rashi and Tosfos and other Rishonim discuss that maybe based on certain Gemaras and other places, maybe indeed a person's height is three amos, and in that case, that would fit very well over here. But you have places that seem to imply that a person's height is four amos, or at least well over three. And the answer is, Tosfos says, when you go into the water, you're displacing some of the water. Well, over here, actually, Tosfos says, listen, you could bend your head to the side and you could still manage to fit it in three amas. In other places, Tosfos points out that when you go into the water, you're displacing some of the water, and therefore it's going to go over your head as long as the mikveh that they're in is large enough to hold the overflow, and therefore that's where your fourth amah is going to be. You know, when you think about it, you have the famous two opinions that we have nowadays of what the size of an amma is. You have the Chazon Ish, which makes it to be about 2 feet. And we have Rabbi Avraham Chaim Noah, who makes it to be about 1.5 feet. And for different purposes in halacha, we use different ones. When it comes to a mikveh, actually, for example, the Alter Rebbe actually held closer to the Chazon Ish's opinion, and even beyond that, as in the back of Shulchan Aruch, and in the back of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch Yodeya, you have a Rishima over there from Rabbi Yaakov Landau that describes how the Rebbe Rashab told him, they gave him instructions to build a mikveh, the mikveh in Rastav, which they rediscovered 20-odd years ago. Anyway, and one of the instructions is that for purposes of a mikveh, we consider an amma as being around 25 inches. Anyway, there are different opinions how long an amma is. So it could be, actually, when you think about it, that may go back to this machlokas, of the Shonim, of how many ammas tall is a person. If we say a person is 4 ammas tall, then obviously an amma is not 2 feet, because people aren't 8 feet tall. So then of necessity, we'd have to say an amma would be more like Rav Avraham Chaim Noah's amma, an amma and a half, and 4 of those make about 6 feet. If you say, on the other hand, like Tosfos is saying over here and in other places, that a person's height is 3 amos, and then when we talk about a person taking up 4 amos, we mean, for example, if he's lying down and stretching his arms over his head, then that would be more like that can't be Rav Avraham Chaim Noah's amma. 3 of those are going to be, what, 4.5 feet? So therefore, that works better with the Chazon Ish's shitta and with the Alter Rebbe's shitta when it comes to a mikveh, that three amas of 24, 25 inches comes out again to about 6 feet. Okay. In any case, that whole concept, so that whole concept that you need that size mikveh, and the Gemara finishes off, the Shir Chachamim may mikveh, Abayim Sah, the Chachamim calculated that 3 cubic amas equals 40 Sah, and that's where we get the 40 Sah of a mikveh. That whole concept that doesn't say in a pasuk. We only have to learn it from the fact that it says it's called the Sarai. So that's what we mean. Yesh Lehem Amashi Yismoichu. There's definitely a solid basis for it in Torah Shabbat. The words that's called the Sarai. But nevertheless, it's still Torah Shabbat Peh tells us the actual amount. And Torah Shabbat Peh is also telling us, for example, that the same for every person. After all, you can have a person who's particularly short, and they can fit in, or very particularly thin, and they could fit in a smaller mikveh. The fact that doesn't work, that you need 40 saw for everybody, that's what Torah Shabbat Peh tells us. Next, the Mishnah had said Tmeis, that so we said Taras and Trumos. So taras, we said, is the fact of is a shear mikra. What's a din in shear in Hilchas Tumah that we wouldn't know explicitly from Torah Shemachsav? The question is michtav ksivan. It says all of it, and the answer is lenitzruch el kadosh min asheret leksiva. Yes, but there's an essential point in Hilchas Tumah that you don't have in the Pesukim, namely the minimum size of a sheretz that makes a person tamei. The Torah never spells it out, and we have to learn from Torah Shabbat Kadosha the size of a lentil. The Tanya, we learn in a Pesuk, that when we learn in a Braisa, that when the Pesuk says Bahem, the Pesuk says if you become tamei by them, meaning by one of the shrotzim, Yochel Bekulon, you'd think maybe a person is tamei only if he touches the entire creature. No, Tamad Lima Mayhem. Another pasuk says, anything that if a sheretz falls, if something of a sheretz falls on one of the on food, then it makes it tamei. So there it says mayhem from then. So we mean even not the entire sheretz. But Yochav Mekzasan, so you would think it means any tiny fragment of a sheretz is metamei. No, Tamad Lima Bahem. After all, the pasuk did say Bahem, implying that you need to have a substantial amount of a sheretz. So what is it? Hoketzad, how do we reconcile that? Ad Shiyagia Bimekzase Shul Kekuloi. It has to be that you're touching a part of a sheretz, but it's the equivalent for a certain purpose of all of it. What does that mean? Shiru Chachamim Kadosha. The Chachamim figured out that it means the size of a lentil. By the way, we have to remember when we say over here the Chachamim and in the previous one of the Mikvah Chachamim, we don't mean like the Anshef Nes Gdolah or some Chachamim like that hundreds of years after the Torah was given. The Pashtus, we mean the Chachamim of Moshe Rabbeinu's times already. They had to sit down and figure those things out. The first time a person becomes Tomei, we need to know what the minimum size of a sheretz that's going to make him Tomei. We need to know what the size of a mikveh that's going to make him Tahor. So it would mean as soon as Moshe received that halacha from Hashem and came and taught it to the Jewish people, right then the Chachamim sat down, including Moshe, sat down and figured out these dinim. So Shira Chachamim, the Kadosh, the Chachamim figured out the amount of a sheretz that will make a person Tomei is the size of a lentil. Why a lentil? Shekin chomet tchilasi v'kadosha. Because a chomet, which is one of the shmona shrotim, Rashi says that it's a snail or a slug, a snail. Actually, Rashi says because he says a godol beklipa ha'ilechas ma'agelas tamid kol kamash godol. It lives inside a shell that gets more and more bigger and rounder as it grows. Which so he's talking about a snail. Anyway, so tchilasi v'kadosha when it's first formed. When it first is born, it's the size of a lentil. So therefore, so a lentil can be considered mayhem from them, which is bahem, which is the equivalent of the entire sheretz. Because when the sheretz is first born, it is in fact the size of a lentil. Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda disagrees and says the minimum amount maybe he doesn't disagree on the actual amount. He's disagreeing on where we learn a kadosha from, because he says like the tail of a lizard, a latar is some kind of lizard. It's also one of the shemona shrotim, and if you cut off the tail, then it still considers wiggling for a while. It still continues to wiggle for a while, showing that it has like its own independent chayus. So therefore, that would be mitzaseh shikikulay. So it could be he's arguing on the actual amount. He's saying it's not kadosha, but rather kiznav alatar. It could be that he's arguing. Could be that he agrees on the amount. Kadosha, but he's disagreeing where we learn it from. In any case, all of that concept, it doesn't say in Torah Shabbat Chsav, or rather, we have Sukkim in Torah Shabbat Chsav, but we need Torah Shabbat Peh in order to interpret them, in order to understand the actual din. The last one in the Mishnah was Arayas. The last category of halachas in the Mishnah was the dinim of Arayas, who exactly is and isn't an erva. So again, the question is michtav ksivan. Those are explicitly written in the Pesukim, the 20 or so relatives, which we're going to learn in a couple of weeks in Yevamos, Be'ez Hashem. We're going to talk about them extensively. All of those it says in the Pesukim. What is there to learn from Torah Shabbat there? The answer is lo nitzricha l'bitei ma'anusasa d'lo ksiva. Yeah, but here is an important one. We know a man is not allowed to have relations with his daughter. And in fact, not only with his daughter, but even with his stepdaughter. So if he marries a woman who has a daughter, then he's not allowed to have relations with her. But What about if he didn't marry the woman, if he was ma'anis her, if he raped her? How do we know that he's not allowed to marry her? How do we know that he's not allowed to have relations with her daughter? Again, assuming that that daughter is not from him. L'bita manu sasa deloy k'siva. For his daughter, we are talking about where he fathered the daughter. But after all, the pasuk says that you're eras isha uvita loisigale. So how do we know that refers also to an anusa rather than only to a woman who you married? The pasuk doesn't even say explicitly that a man's not allowed to have relations with his daughter. That itself we learn from Sukkim. The pasuk mentions that you're not allowed to marry, that you're not allowed to have relations with your granddaughter. So therefore, we understand that the daughter is included as well. Rashi points out we don't learn it from a kal vachomer because ein oinshin min adin. You can't punish somebody with mitzah based on a kal vachomer. So we actually need a limud and a pasuk for it. But that limud tells us that not only that any kind of daughter, whether it's from a woman you married, whether it's from a woman you were ma'anis, so that whole concept doesn't say in the Torah. The Rambam, by the way, points out a logical thing. You could say that since it says you can't have relations with your granddaughter, it didn't need to bother mentioning explicitly that you can't have with your daughter because it's pretty obvious. But nevertheless, obvious is not good enough. When it comes to dini nefashis, you need an actual source. So therefore, now we're going to give the source, which we have from Torah Shabbat Peh. The Amar Rava, Amar li Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi. Rava says that Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi told me. There is, in fact, the Tosfos points out there are two Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimis in Shas. Because elsewhere, the Gemara brings a Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avdimi who talked with Rav and taught him something in Halacha. In fact, there are Rishonim who say over here, what do you mean Rav? It should say Rav over here. He lived in the time of Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avdimi. But Tosfos says, in fact, we can see, based on comparing various Gemaras, that there were, in fact, two different Rabbi Yitzchak bar Avdimis, one in the time of Rav, and then another one several decades later in the time of Rav. Anyway, so Omali Rav Yitzchak bar Avdimi, Asya Heina Heina, Asya Zima Zima. We learn that a man is not allowed to have relations with his daughter. We learn the Isser from a Gzera Shava on the word Heina, namely, when it talks about that a man is not allowed to marry a Ishovit, not allowed to have relations with a woman and her daughter, it says, the Pasuk says, Shara Heina. Zimahi, it says they are relatives, and therefore it's immorality to do that. A few psukim earlier, when it talks about that a man's not allowed to have relations with his granddaughters, also the Torah uses the same word heina, ki ervoscha heina, that they are considered your own erva. So when it comes to nisuin, when it comes to a man marries a woman, the Torah spells out Ervas Isho Vita Loisigale. It says you're not allowed to be Megala Erva, a woman and her daughter. And it continues, Es Bas Bnav Es Bas Vita, also not her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter. So there it clearly says that if you marry a woman, then her not only her daughters, but her granddaughters are considered Arayas to you. So now, a few psukim earlier, when it says ervas bas bincha, bas bitcha, your own grandchildren, your own granddaughters, loisigala ervasan, ki ervascha heina, so the heina over there gives us a gzeira shava that says the same way it applies equally well to your own daughter. Since the pasuk says your granddaughter, and we know in connection with isho vita that it means daughters as well as granddaughters, so the gzeira shava tells us that the same way ki ervascha heina refers to your own daughter. So that's how we know the Azhara. And then when it comes to the Oynesh, how do we know that all of them are Chayiv Srefa? There we have a different Gzeira Shava on the word Zima. Namely, that it says over here that you have Shara Hena Zimahi. And you have also later on in Parshas Kedoshim, when it repeats the Arayas and gives the punishments for them. So it says that if a man marries a woman and her mother, Zimahi, then it's immorality. And Ba'ish Yisru for Oysev Esen. So the Gzeder Shava on the word Zima tells us that the same punishment applies to a woman and her daughter, and we know already it applies to a woman and her granddaughter as well, because that the Pasuk told us back in Parshas Sin, in Parshas Achrimos. So the same way, the same punishment applies to your own granddaughter as to your own daughter. So that whole concept that a daughter is also and is considered one of the Arayas, and that it carries the same punishment as the Arayas, that we know only from Torah Shabbat Peh. So that's what we mean, yesh lahem amashi yismeichu. There's a solid basis for it in Torah Shabbat Chsav, but we need Torah Shabbat Peh to tell us to understand it. The Mishnah had finished off hein hein gufei Torah. They are the fundamentals of Torah. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Hey, it sounds like we're talking only about the last group. Hani ein hanach loy. So what are you telling me? Only the ones that it says, that it says most of it explicitly in the Pesukim are gufei Torah, and the ones that you mostly need Torah Shabbat Peh to interpret are not. No, ela ema hein vehein gufei Torah. You're right. The word in the Mishnah is not hein hein, these are, but rather hein vehein, these and these. All of the categories of halachas that we mentioned in the Mishnah are all gufei Torah. They're all essentials of Torah. Don't think, the Tanna is telling us, don't think that because some of them are learned more from Torah Shabbat Peh and others, than others, for example, Hetta Nedarim, where we said there's next to nothing about it in Torah Shabbat Chsav, so you're going to say, you're apt to think to yourself, oh, you know, the Chacham made up something or whatever. Don't think that. Realize that those are Gufei Torah. Those are just as much essential mitzvahs in the Torah that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai as the ones where it says more explicitly in the Pesukim. Hadron Alacha Kol Chayavim. This next Perek, the first half of the Perek, the first five, six block of it, the topic that it's going to be talking about has really nothing to do with Masechta Chagiga. But in the previous Mishnah, we listed the various, at the end of the first paragraph, we listed the various categories of mitzvahs in Torah, the various categories of halachas, some of which have more and some of which have less in Torah Shabbat Chsav. The last one we learned was Arayas. So now our Mishnah picks up on that and talks about a din regarding teaching of, regarding the dinim of teaching details in Arayas. And then agav that, it mentions certain other things, that there are restrictions. So the Mishnah is going to say that there are certain restrictions on how you teach Arayas. And this is, and the same way, the Mishnah is going to say that there are restrictions on how you teach certain other areas of Torah. That's going to be the subject of our Mishnah and the Gemara on it. So the Mishnah says, "Ein darshin ba'arayas b'shloisha." When you're darshining in Arayas, you cannot darshin with three people present. And the Gemara is going to explain what area of Arayas we're talking about. But in other words, you can't have a Rebbe teaching to two Talmidim for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain. V'loy b'maisa bereshis b'shnayim. When you're teaching maisa bereshis, then you can't have two. You can't just teach it one on one unless, as the Mishnah is going to go on to say, that the Talmud is of the caliber to do it. V'loy b'merkava b'yachid, and to darshan about the merkava, you're not allowed to learn about the merkava. You're not even allowed to all by yourself. Ela im kein hayachacham or maybe midaitay, unless you or the Talmud are a chacham and are able to understand things on your own. In other words, that you can talk about the basics, and he'll be able to understand from that what he will be able to understand from that what you're talking about. What are ma'ase bereishis and what are ma'ase merkava? So there's so basically, broadly speaking, ma'ase bereishis is all the secrets of how Hashem created the world, and ma'ase merkava is all the secrets of Hashem's Merkava, of Hashem's throne and chariot that are described in Yechezkel and a couple of other places in Tanakh, and all the Malachim and all that. So the Rambam at the beginning of the Hilchos Yesod HaTorah spends two prakim talking about what Elokus is, what the nature, what how we can describe Hashem, and then the various Malachim that attend on him, and that's Ma'ase Merkava. And then he goes on in the following two chapters. He talks about the basics of physics, of natural science, of how the world works, and he says that's Ma'ase Bereishis. Not everybody agrees to that, because on the face of it, what the Rambam is describing in Perek Gimel and Dalet over there is more like science. It's more like the basics of science of how the world functions. So that's Maisa Bereshis that we're saying over here, that you have to restrict how many people you can teach it to. So rather, many Rishonim say that Maisa Bereshis means the Kabbalah behind it. And even now, the Rambam himself, there's a well-known thing that says, in the Rambam's times, it was usur to reveal Chochmas HaKabbalah, and therefore the Rambam couldn't reveal it, because the halachas of our Mishnah were in effect, and therefore the Rambam couldn't write it out openly. So he writes it in a way that seems to be very philosophical and based on the science and the philosophy and whatever of that time, but hidden in it are the real Maisim Bereshis and the real Maisim Merkava. In later times, we don't actually, so the Rambam brings the halachas of Ein Doshin Ba'arayis V'Shloshal V'Lod Ma'is V'Reshit V'Shnayim, etc. Later poskim, though, don't bring it. So in fact, already the Rav Yah, one of the early Rishonim, says, listen, the difference is, in those times, they learned everything Baal Peh. Nowadays, we learn everything from Svarim, so therefore there's less of an issue with teaching. The Gemara is going to explain why you have to teach these things in small groups or not at all, because people may misinterpret them. Well, once it's written down, there's much less problem with that. In particular, as far as Chochmas HaKabbalah, we know that it came in later times, that it actually became eventually eventually the Arizal said it's not only mutter, it's mitzvah, legalis zoysa chochmah. So over time, these restrictions on learning Kabbalah have kind of faded away. That everyone's talked about in a sikha. I mean, you know, halacha doesn't change. So how could this change? That it used to be that it was so hidden and you're not allowed to teach it, the yochid, etc. And all of a sudden now we teach it to the public. So one point is, given that the reason for it was because people may misinterpret it, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. Well, as time goes on, people are less prone to misinterpreting it because it was well explained, it was well clarified by the Mekubalim, and now there's much less of a problem that a person may misinterpret it and come to wrong ideas about it, of course. That's one. And then the other thing is, because we're coming closer to Mashiach's time, therefore already we're given a taste of Torah Sesha Mashiach, the ability to learn these areas of Torah. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Tosfos, by the way, brings a different explanation of Maisa Bereshis. Maisa Bereshis is Mem Beis. So it refers to a name of Hashem of 42 letters, which is derived from the Pasuk Bereshis and the beginning of the Pasuk after it. That's brought in Sifrei Kabbalah that we're talking about in particular. Bereshis Bara Elikim Es HaShemayim Ve'es HaOretz Va'oretz Hoysa Soihu Vavoyu. That adds up to 42 letters. Somehow, Alpi Kabbalah, there's a name of Hashem that's derived from those letters. So that, Tosfos says, is the Maisa Bereshis that we're talking about over here, that there are limitations on who you can teach it to. Continues the Mishnah. Kol ha-mistakel ba'avar dvarim, a person who gazes at the following four things, who starts contemplating them and thinking about them, rosui loy ki'ilu loy bala olam. It's rosui for him that he wouldn't have come into the world. Rashi explains the word rosui is maloshin rachmanus. It would be more of a rachmanus on such a person if he never came into the world, rather than that he came into the world and now he's delving into these things with the four things that the Mishnah is going to mention, which may cause him to come up with heretical ideas about the course and about how Hashem created the world and whatever. There is a different gears of ra'ui loy. I mean, it would have been fitting for him to not come into the world. Anyway, what are those four things? Malamaila malamata. What is above the heavens and what is below the earth? Actually, Rashi says, malamailo, malamata, means what's higher than the rakia al roshe achayas and what's below them. Namely, in Yechezkel's vision of the Merkava, he sees the chayas akodesh, then he sees above them is rakia keina kerach anoira. There's a sky, there's like an expanse above them, like awesome ice. And then above that, he sees the kisei covered with kabiyachol Hashem sitting on it. Dmus ala kisei kemare adam. So the Mishnah is warning you, don't think too much about what's above that rakia and what's below that rakia, meaning namely the chayes hakodesh themselves. It's best not to contemplate that. And malafonim or malaocher, and what's in front and what's behind. Rashi says we're talking about the rakia, the heavens are like a vault over the earth, like an arch over the earth. So you start thinking about what's beyond it to the east and what's beyond it to the west. So those are things a person shouldn't be thinking about, because he's likely to come up with wrong ideas about it. We can't see them. We can't experience them. We can't do any experiments to see what's there. So a person is likely to come up with ideas. For example, he's going to start thinking that there sits an old man with a white beard, and he, you know, that's his conception of Hashem, which is wrong, because he may start thinking that the world has always existed, as there was a popular philosophy in that time, and so forth. So therefore, it's going to cause him problems. In Rashi, there's a Tosfos, there's an addition in Rashi that lufonim and la'ocher doesn't mean like he's said, but beyond the eastern side of the sky and beyond the western side of the sky. Rather, this Tosfos in Rashi says that it means what was there before the world came into existence, and what is going to be there after the world ceases to exist. So those kinds of things also a person shouldn't really be thinking into, because again, he starts thinking about what was there before the world existed. He may start coming up with ideas. For example, like I said, you know, the idea that the world or the matter has always existed and Hashem didn't create it or something like that. And then the same thing with Mala Ocher, thinking about what's going to be after the world ceases to exist, he may come up with wrong ideas. And the Mishnah finishes off, V'chol shalei chos al kavod koinoi, a person who does not have concern for the kavod of Hashem, for the kavod of his creator, also rosulo shalei balaylam, he would have been better off, it would have been more of a rachmanus on him if he had never come into the world. The Gemara is going to explain later what it means, chos al kavod koinoi. We're going to have something about it later on Dr. Zayin. An interesting idea is that Amram says kavod koinoi, in Pirush HaMishnayos over here, that Amram says kavod koinoi means a person's seichel. The Eibishter gave you a seichel, that's the kavod that the Eibishter gave you. So a person doesn't have rachmanus on it, is not chos on it, and he misuses it. So Rosu Loish Lovelam, he would have been better off not being born rather than misusing that precious cupboard, that precious seichel that Hashem gave him. So the Gemara starts off. Amrit Bereish of Loibam Kaba Yachid. Now what's going on as far as Maisim Kaba? First we're saying the Loibam Kaba Yachid, meaning that you're not even allowed to learn Maisim Kaba yourself, even without learning it from a Rebbe. So obviously we're talking about somebody who understands it, and therefore is able to learn it by himself, and the Mishnah is warning him not to do it. But then the Mishnah continues, only if he was a Chacham or Maven Midaitoi, implying that if he's a Chacham or Maven Midaitoi, he could learn it. So what's going on? The answer is Hachikama. Right, what the Mishnah means is, Ein Dershin Ba'arayis L'Shloisha, it doesn't mean like we thought that it means Shloisha means the Rebbe and two Talmidim, and then and Bishnayim would mean the Rebbe and one Talmud. The numbers in the Mishnah are referring to the numbers of Talmidim. When you're darshaning Arayas, you cannot darshan them to three people. When you're darshaning on Maisi Bereshis, you cannot darshan to two Talmidim at a time. For reasons, all of them we're going to discuss the reasons later. And as far as Maisi Merkava, about the Malachim and Chayis HaKodesh, and higher levels of and high levels of other course, those you can only teach a yachid, elim keno yachacham or maven midaitoi, unless that yachid was chacham or maven midaitoi. So that way, Rashi explains why does it need to be chacham or maven midaitoi, particularly by that, because you don't want him to be asking a lot of questions by the Rebbe, because there's a lot of details in these things about the high levels of other course and malachim and chayis hakodesh and so forth, where it wouldn't be derech eretz to ask a lot of questions about it, because these are things that are basically meant to be hidden, or at least in those times, again, they were meant to be hidden, and therefore we don't want the Talmud to be asking a lot of questions. Therefore, we need him to be chacham maven midaitoi, so as soon as the Rebbe says something, he can grasp the implications of it himself without needing to ask. The Maharal has an interesting point over here, by the way. He says, so you have those elikus, there's how Hashem created the world, and then there's how Hashem arranged the world and what he said is allowed and not allowed and goes together and doesn't go together in it. Those are the three things we're saying in the Mishnah. We have Maisim Merkava, which represents how Hashem himself is higher than the Merkava, so symbolizing the idea that Hashem is beyond the world. Then you have Maisi Bereshis, which is how Hashem created the world. And then you have Arayas, which is how Hashem made the world to function properly, that these people can marry and these people cannot. These things can go together. Those things cannot. So therefore, those represent all those three different things. And each one, therefore, is on a different level, and you have a different number of Talmidim that you can teach it to. Now, so we said ein darshin ba'arayas b'shloisha. We said darshin and arayas, you're not allowed to darshin. We said in the end, shloisha means three people altogether. So why not? My timer. Are you going to say that we learn it from a pasuk? The pasuk introduces the concept of arayas, the dinim of arayas by saying ish ish al kol she'er b'sarei. Man is not allowed to approach his close relative. So you're going to say ish ish means trei and she'er b'sarei chad. You're going to say the word ish ish means two people. She'er b'sarei then would be the third one. But Amar Nachmana loy sikru v'legalas erva, and the pasuk is saying don't approach that to be megala erva. So in other words, don't three of you gather together in order to learn Parshas Arayas. Can't be. Elamayata, by that logic, if we're going to say ish ish always means two people, what about, for example, so the ish ish ki yikalu ala kav? It says, for example, a man, if he curses Hashem. Or ish ish asher yitin mizari lamoylech, or where it says a man who gives, of course, in each of these places, the simple meaning of ish ish means any man. Any man is not allowed to come close to his sherebosser. Any man is not allowed to curse Hashem and face his punishment if he does. Any man is not allowed to give Asher Yitin Mizari LaMoylach, who gives over from his children to Moylach. If you're going to say in each of those cases that ish ish, we darshan from it, that it means two men, Hochinami, are you going to say the same thing with those, that there are restrictions how many people are allowed to learn them? No, Elahanu mi boilei. Obviously, what are we learning from that ish? L'rabas is anochrim shemuz horin al birkas Hashem v'alav adizorah ki Yisrael. From there, we learn that goyim have an iser to curse Hashem and to worship avadizorah, just like Jews do. Ish means any man, any person, whether goy or Jew, and those are two of the shev mitzvahs menayah. Well, then, in that case, once we understand ish that way over there. Well, hi nami meboilei l'rabas anochrim shemuz horin al arayas ki Yisrael. Well, then the ish by arayas also. We needed to tell us that goyim are also in arayas. Not as many as Jews, granted, but they are also in six arayas. So we're using ish for that. So no, we can't say that's where we learn that we can't have three together. Rather, we're going to say you learn it from a pasuk at the end of the parasha of Arayas. It says, you, plural, should guard my guarding. So you're going to say, shmartim trei mishmarti chad. You're going to say, you, plural, should guard means two. The word mishmarti means another one. And the pasuk continues not to do according to the laws and the fashions of the disgusting things that the goyim did. So you're going to say, in other words, the Torah is warning you: don't have three together learning about these chukas ha'tayevus. Can't be. The word of shmartim doesn't necessarily mean a plural. Elamata, the tibu shmartim as a Shabbos. The pasuk says you plural should guard Shabbos. Or shmartim as a matzis. You plural should guard the matzis, keeping from becoming chametz. Or shmartim as mishmeres hakodesh. The Levim are told, the Kodim and Levim are told, you plural should gather, should guard the guarding of the holy place, so the Mishkan. Hochinami, so you're going to say the same thing. It means there are restrictions on how many people can learn those together. Of course not. The Mishnah didn't say any such thing. So it can't be that we're learning from a pasuk that you can't have three people learning Arayas together. Ela Omer of Ashi. Rather, Rav Ashi says, "My ein darshin ba'arayas b'shloisha." What does this mean? We don't darshin in arayas with three people together. It means ein darshin b'sisrei arayas b'shloisha. Means we're not allowed to darshin the hidden things about arayas with three. What do we mean by the hidden things? So Rashi says, for example, we just had at the end of the previous parak, the top of the Amud, we had bitay manu sasa, the whole concept that a man is not allowed to have relations with his daughter, even if he was never married to her mother. We just said before, we learn it only from Torah Shabbat Peh, it doesn't say explicitly in the pasuk. That kind of thing, don't darshan to three talmidim together, because as the Gemara is going to say, they may not pay close attention, and they're going to end up being matur things that are also. That's one explanation of Sisri Arayas. Marsha brings another explanation that he says he found in Sefer Yoshan, in an old Sefer, that he says Sisri Arayas means the reasons al pi Kabbalah for the Arayas. You can find in the Zohar, it talks about in some places, the Tzemach Tzedek brings in Derech Mitzvei Secha, a number of them. Why is it that these Arayas are also in the first place? What are those things do Beruchnius? And in some of those places, in fact, it talks about, for example, all over Kabbalah and Chassidus, it talks about Yehudim some of which reflect arayas that are also. So if you're darshaning these kinds of things to three people together, then they're like they may, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, they may not pay close attention and they may end up misinterpreting it, and then they're going to think to themselves that these things are actually mutter. And then the Tosfos Rid says another possibility of Sisir Arayas. He says the fact is you have various kulas in Arayas. For example, classic thing as we have in Masechta Kiddushin, you have all kinds of cases of where you would think that Kiddushin are chal and they're not. So there you have, you thought that this woman is an Eishes Ish and it turns out that she's not. And then various other things like that. That's what we're saying. Our Sisir Arayas, don't be darshaning it to three people together, because as the Gemara is going to say, they're not going to pay close enough attention and they're likely to misinterpret and think that there are things that are actually, that are in fact valid kedushin, that are also that you might think are mutter. So what's going on? Why doctor three? So might so in doshin, the sister arayas b'shloisha. So you can't have three people, you can't have three talmidim at a time. My time, now why is that svarahu? It's not based on a pasuk, it's based on a svara. Because if two people are sitting as a Talmud in front of their Rebbe, what's going to happen during the course of the learning? One of them is going to engage in a discussion with the Rebbe and say, and say, I don't understand this point, or I want to be, or I want to discuss this point in greater detail, or whatever. And the other one pays attention. The other one is not joining in the conversation, but he pays close attention. He wants to hear what his chaver and what his rebbe are saying to each other, so that he'll understand it better. So therefore, two is fine because they're both going to hear and absorb everything that's going on. But if you have three people, what's going to happen is one of them is sitting and discussing with the Rebbe. Meanwhile, the other two are not necessarily just going to sit there listening. They're going to meanwhile engage in a discussion of their own between themselves to understand what they just learned. So therefore, they're missing out what their Rebbe is meanwhile saying to the one Talmud who asked him. But also the mishra is sort of arayas. The result is they may mistakenly come up being matir, something which is usur when it comes to arayas, because the Rebbe is going to clarify something to the one Talmud from which we learn something in arayas. So like Rashi says, a particular drosha from which we learn a certain kind of arayas, or like Marsha says, that don't think because you have this reason of pikabola for arayas, therefore maybe the din doesn't apply when the reason of pikabola doesn't apply. Or like Tosfos Rid, don't think because in this case the kedushin are not valid, therefore in the other case the kedushin are not valid. So they're going to wind up in matir, something that's also in arayas, so therefore you can't do that. Then shouldn't the same thing apply to the rest of the Torah as well? Don't you have the same problem? The answer is arayas shiny. It's different when it comes to arayas. There's a special taiva for them. When it comes to gezel, stealing, and arayas, a person has a tremendous his nefesh desires them, and he has a great desire. He has a great pull towards them. So therefore, arayas, more than almost anything else, a person is likely to, if he has a suffix in other areas of halacha, a person has a suffix, he's more likely to think to himself, okay, you know what, I don't know, for example, if this piece of meat is kosher, okay, I'll probably scafia and I won't eat it, to be on the safe side. But when it comes to arayas, the person has a powerful yetzahara for it, and therefore he's more likely to say, you know what, there's a suffix, I don't know, right, how bad could it be? It's probably mutter. So therefore, we don't want that. The question is, yohi gezel nami. Wouldn't have said so. In that case, we should have the same. We just said gezel v'arayas. So the same thing should be as far as the dinim of gzela, that you can't teach them the three talmidim at a time. The answer is there's a difference between the kind of yetzahara for them. Arayas bein b'fonav bein shloi b'fonav nafish yitzrei. When it comes to arayas, whether they're in your presence or whether or not, either way, a person has a powerful yetzahara for it. So therefore, so right now, when they're sitting and learning in the Bais Medrash, they're learning about the Dinim of Arayas, they don't have an actual Erva in front of them right now. But nevertheless, the person's Yetzer for Arayas is likely to get the better of him and to think, if he doesn't pay attention to everything that his Rebbe says, to think to himself that, okay, this thing is probably Mutter, it's not so bad or whatever, and then therefore come to be Mat or something, because his Yetzer is burning within him and trying to get him into that. Gezel, when it comes to gezel, before of nafish yitzrei, sure, when you have the money or the object or whatever right in front of you, then you have a taiva for it, and you want to cut corners and say, yeah, it's probably hefker, it's probably the guy wouldn't mind or whatever. Shaloi b'fanav, loy nafash yitzrei. But when it's not, when you don't have the object in front of you, you don't have such a powerful yetzahara for it. So if you're learning in yeshiva, and you're learning Bava Kama, and you're learning about dinim of gezel, and dinim about what belongs to you, and what belongs to the other guy, and harei or the shaloi, and chayiv lahachris, and so forth, you don't have the actual object in front of you. You have the discussion in the Gemara about the object. So that doesn't kindle your yetzahara so much to say, you know what, let me cut corners and take that thing for myself. As opposed to Arayas, there's more likely that the yetzahara is going to get you to try to cut corners, even though you don't have it in front of you. So therefore, so it's specifically Arayas that we have this limitation on how many people you can teach it to at a time. Again, like we said before, the Rav Yoh says that Amal brings it in Shulchan Aruch, that nowadays that things are written down in Sfarim, then there's less of an issue with that because nowadays that it's all written down, then there's less wiggle room, there's less room for misinterpretation, and therefore maybe these dinim about how many you're allowed to teach to, about how many you're allowed to teach Arayas at a time don't necessarily apply. Okay, so we'll pick up tomorrow, Baz Hashem, and we're going to start talking. The Mishnah had said, "Beloi b'maisa b'reishis b'shnayim," and then we're going to get into a long discussion about the details of maisa, about many of the details of maisa b'reishis, many of the concepts in Kabbalah and in Chassidus that we talk about, as far as the Olam HaSoyonim and all that, come from the next couple of blocks of Gemara.
Shukayach. Yeah. Have a wonderful day.